Thank you very much. Before I do anything else, I want to apologize for my dress. I should have had on a jacket or something, but I've been here rehearsing all day. We're doing a concert in the next room tonight, and I didn't have a chance to go back and change, but I'm really, really happy to be here and to see all of you here, because this is so important for you and for me too, because you're my future. I'm counting on you to do the right thing, because you're the future, and you're the future leaders, and education is so important to you. I want to stress that before I say anything else to you. School is your job. It's what you have to do right now. You have to do it, and you have to, I don't say you have to love it, but I hope you do, because it's about your future, and it's about what's going to make you have a good life, and it's the road to a good life. And I want all of you to take your education seriously, because you have to have it. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And so I'm counting on you. I want to introduce a man to you. Those of you, I'm sure all of you follow music. And our Oscars, our Academy Awards, are the Grammys. And we have the Grammy celebration every year. And a man who is so essential to our Grammy program, and who is one of the top people associated with the Grammys, is here tonight. And he's also a really good friend of mine. He's a wonderful man, and I want you to welcome him, Mr. Bob Santelli.
Thank you. Well, welcome to the White House. This is something that is not only very exciting for the Grammy Museum and the Recording Academy, but also all of you and all that you represent. Because in addition to those of you who are here, there are thousands of students across America that are catching this web stream and will be listening in and hopefully learning something about civil rights and enjoying what we have in store for you today, just like you will be doing here live. First of all, let me see who's in the house again. So we have, I know we have Los Angeles. Yeah, okay. We have Compton. Okay. We have Seattle. Yeah, okay. We have DC. Where's Washington, DC? In the back? Okay. That's all for what? You're the home team. That's all we hear?
Snowed in.
Okay. What else? Who else? We have Denver. Where's Denver? There's Denver. Okay. Who else? Chi-town? Chicago? Okay. Chicago. All right. And who else? New York here? Cleveland is here. And New York is here. Denver, we said. So, first of all, congratulations on getting here in the first place. All right. This was not easy. And, of course, so many different things have stood in the way of making this a reality, but we're all here today, and the show must go on, as they say. So let me get started with just a few remarks before we bring up the musicians, and you get a chance to ask some questions about the music of the Civil Rights Movement and how it still impacts us today as Americans. Before we get to that point, let me just give you a little bit of an overview of why and how this music got to be so important. First of all, let me say this, that the civil rights movement in this country is one of America's greatest stories. It's one of our greatest stories, one of our greatest triumphs. It's a story that is uniquely American and something that resonates in us and with us every day. Whether you're African American, Latino, Native American, even white, no matter what you are, this is our story. This is an American story, and it's something that we should all hold dear. Now, we should also hold dear the music of the Civil Rights Movement, because the music of the Civil Rights music represents one of the biggest gems in the American music treasury. Now, why is that the case? Well, if you go back in time, go back to the origins of the Civil Rights Movement, no one really knows for sure exactly when. We could say in 1955, we could say Rosa Parks, but sometimes it goes back to maybe Jackie Robinson in the late 1940s when he broke the color barrier in baseball. Even before that, when African Americans who were enslaved in this country stood up and said, this is wrong. Now, they may not have won that war or that battle in the 17th century, the 18th century, the 19th century, but in the 20th century, in the middle of the 20th century, it happened. And there was a movement in this country that allowed people to stand up, people of color, to stand up and say, enough. Where did it happen? How did it happen? It came from the church. Primarily, it came from the church. The greatest civil rights leader from the movement, the great Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., was just that, a reverend. Came from the church. The music of the civil rights movement came from the church as well. So the church, which always played a major part in African-American culture, was really the place, the melting pot, the inspiration area where this movement came from. And it was led by church leaders, and it was often, the songs were often songs from the church. Now, if you go back in time, back to the 1700s and 1800s, there was a music form that, well, it came out of slavery by and large. It was called the Negro Spiritual. The Negro Spiritual was a song that was created mostly by slaves and later freed slaves. And these songs were religious songs, and they dealt with themes of salvation, hope, redemption, ideas about being free and going to the promised land at some point, being, if you will, rewarded for years of hardship, whether you were a slave or a freedman. But the world could be cruel. If you stayed the course, if you sang these songs and believed the lyrics, you would then ultimately be free. And that was basically the themes for almost all of the Negro spirituals. Okay? Now, when music was necessary to begin fueling the civil rights movement, the obvious place to look was also in the church, since that's where the ideas and the leaders were coming from. And they took some of these Negro spirituals and then the music form that the Negro spiritual later evolved into, gospel music. So you had Negro spirituals and gospel music coming from mostly African-American churches, and that was the music that early civil rights leaders and civil rights singers and workers used. Now, let me ask you a question. Why do you think music was so important to the movement? What did the music supply the civil rights workers, the people, the activists, the people marching? What do you think? Hope. Absolutely, it gave hope. What else? A voice. It was, music is always a voice of the common man and the disenfranchised. So it gave him a voice, a common voice as well. Freedom. It gave him a sense of freedom and empowerment. Yes, it did. But I'm looking for one word. It also helped diminish or shrink what? Communication. It had communications, but think about fear. Think about if you are a marcher. Say you're 19 or 20 years old and you're a college kid, whether you are white or black, you are going to march and you know that violence is probably not even, not just a possibility, but a probability that you could be hurt, seriously hurt, that you could be maimed, that you might even be killed. But you use this music as a sense of inspiration and a way to diminish the fear that you are feeling inside your soul and inside your heart. It gave you the kind of muscle and spirit to move forward. Power and strength are the two most important elements of this music. There's no question about it. Because when you sing, and you all sing together, and this was music sung by everyone, as you're going to find out later on in the concert, there were people who felt like, I could never sing a note in my life, never thought about singing a note in my life in front of anyone. And yet I joined hands with my fellow civil rights marchers or workers, and we moved forward singing. It gave them the source of empowerment that they needed. Now, over time, into the 1950s and now into the 1960s, you have a situation where instead of just using old Negro spirituals and old gospel songs, now civil rights workers are using the melodies from those songs and putting together new lyrics. Lyrics that were more accessible and more relevant to the times. So they would use the melodies that everyone knew and they would write new lyrics. After that, people started to write their own melodies and their own their own lyrics. So you had a situation where by 1962 or 63, brand new songs are popping up. It's not just the old songs with new words, but people are writing songs. And two areas in American music gave rise to this. First was this whole sense of folk music, because in the early 1960s, America experienced a resurgence in folk music. People like Bob Dylan, who will be on our show tonight, Joan Baez, who will be on our show tonight, Peter, Paul, and Mary, and others, took to the civil rights movement's main mission and said, we are going to write music about it. So Bob Dylan, for instance, wrote one of the great songs of the civil rights movement, Blowing in the Wind, which many of you know. He took that song, and that song was inspired by an old Negro spiritual. In pop music, in addition to folk music, someone like the great Sam Cooke, he heard Bob Dylan's Blowing in the Wind. He was so inspired by that song, he went home and he wrote a song called A Change Is Gonna Come, which will be heard at this concert tonight as well. One of Sam Cooke's greatest songs. So what starts to happen here is that songs from the civil rights movement are now inspiring pop songwriters. They're now inspiring folk songwriters of all colors, races, and creeds. And some of these songs are starting to go on the pop charts, in addition to being on the front lines of the civil rights movement. So you could be singing Blowing in the Wind in Selma, Alabama, just before the Great March there, but you also could turn on the radio and hear Peter, Paul, and Mary singing that same song, which went way up to the top of the pop charts in the early 1960s. So it's kind of interesting how this happened, where this music of the movement became moving into the pop charts of the times. Bob Dylan wrote many great songs, like The Times They Are A-Changin', Chimes of Freedom, The Ballad of Emmett Till, The Ballad of Medgar Evers. He really caught, and maybe I shouldn't say caught, but almost like put his finger on the pulse of the civil rights movement and expressed it musically for us. Many, many songs. But it wasn't just Bob Dylan, because also on the pop charts, I had mentioned Sam Cooke, but even as late as the late 1960s, when the great Otis Redding wrote a song called Respect. Everybody know the song Respect that Aretha Franklin sings? One of the great all-time classic songs in American pop music. Even though that song wasn't written for the civil rights, it was supposed to be a love song, but that song was embraced by the civil rights movement. Respect. We want respect. We are men, we are women, we want respect. So that song, which started out as a love song, as a pop song, got embraced by the civil rights movement. So you could see it was almost a two-way street. Pop music was giving music to the civil rights movement. Civil rights movement was giving music to the pop charts. Even as late as 1970, 71, one of the great songs of all time, What's Going On by Marvin Gaye. That song, too, is considered a song of great importance to the civil rights movement, because Marvin Gaye, when he wrote that, even though it was the 1970s and not the 60s, and very close to being the end of what we know as a civil rights era, was still very much troubled by what had gone wrong in America and what he had seen. And he wrote, to me, one of the most emotional songs that you could ever hear. And tonight you'll hear that as well by Jennifer Hudson and Yolanda Adams and the others who will be singing that song. But clearly, when we think all the way back, these great songs, there are so many of them that have impacted our lives. What does this all mean to you? Am I supposed to be up here giving you a history lecture? Well, not really. I wanted to give you a little bit of an idea as to the context of what you'll hear today and what's going on tonight and throughout this week here in Washington, D.C. But the most important message I can leave with you and what you're going to hear as I bring up our guests in just a minute is that this music continues to live, because one of you said it. Music is the voice of the common man. When you think of what music has done in this country, very often it has been the voice of disenfranchised people, people out on the fringe, people, the common man, perhaps the worker, the person who's been exploited, the person who doesn't have the kind of voice that he or she needs in a democracy. Very often these kind of people have turned to music for their voice. And that continues today, even though the songs of the civil rights era were about a particular time. And by and large, that civil rights era is over. The fight for civil rights continues. The fight for human dignity continues. The fight for equality continues, not just in this country, but all over the world. And wherever there is a great movement, there is music behind that movement. Wherever you hear those great songs, you hear a determined people. And that's what music gives to us as humans, not just Americans, because music is a universal language, as we know, and more than one culture, more than one country has embraced it as that voice of change. And that's what we're looking at, and that's why you're here, and that's why Smokey said what he said. You are the future of America. At some point, if not already, you will have emotionally connected to songs that mean something very, very important to you. The songs that are being written now by hip-hop artists, by pop artists, rock artists today, somehow they touch you, they touch your heart, and they inspire you. And so what you need to do, because you're privileged, you're here at the White House today, what you need to do is carry the messages that I've told you about today and let people know that music is an agent for change in this country. It is an agent to get ideas out. It's an agent to inspire people. This is what makes American music great. This is what makes music in general great. And this is why we're here today to celebrate one aspect, one part, although a very, very important part, the music of the civil rights era. So with that, I'm going to bring out some of our guests. We're going to let you ask some questions to some of our artists, and they're going to play you some of the most important, most amazing civil rights songs. So if you would, please put your hands together and welcome Bernice Regan, Toshi Regan, Ruth Harris, and Charles Neblett, the Freedom Singers. As we get started here, let me just remind you that these musicians up here, not only were they instrumental in creating great music from the civil rights movement, they were also part of the civil rights movement, marching, singing your songs, creating that kind of sense of inspiration that we talked about. So I'm going to ask the first question to Bernice and just give us a sense of how you got involved in music and basically what that music, particularly the civil rights music, has meant to you personally.
How are you doing? How did you get through the security check? You got through okay? Did you get everybody in? Almost. You know, that's the way it was during the civil rights movement. 100% does not happen with human beings. If you want everybody to be there, and you wait for everybody to be there, you'll never get anywhere. When you think about music created by black people, this is a key thing to know. When people watched us during slavery, if they moved through Plantation South, they would say they accompany everything they do with singing. Why is that? It's not that, oh, they really like to sing. Oh, they really love music. It has to do with being in a place and being called out of your name and having a sense you do not have the power to get yourself out of that situation. You wrap yourself in a sound you create in your body, and it helps you to get through the day. That is why there is African American music. That is why it is so powerful. That is why so many people are attracted to it. But very few people understand that when you find yourself in a situation you can't get yourself out of right then, that is not the last word. If people are calling you out of your name and you know you inside you're somebody else, if you can create sonic energy out of who you know you are without giving away overtly what you're saying, you might wake up the next morning and you have not lost your mind. There is a balm in Gilead. Have you ever heard that song? Somebody, anybody heard it? To make, it's a spiritual, the wounded whole. There is a balm in Gilead. Spell balm. Spell the balm I'm saying. B-A-L-M. It's a salve for a wound. These songs are not just about faith and what you're going to do after you die when you get to heaven. It's about, is there something here now I can extract out of myself that allows me to go beyond what is being done to me? There is a balm in Gilead to make the wounded whole. I wish somebody would just extrapolate out there and sing with me. There is a balm in Gilead to heal, to heal the sin sick, the sin sick soul. My name is Bernice Johnson Regan, and I do not know when I did not know that song. I grew up in Southwest Georgia, and Southwest Georgia is organized by race. My school was black, my church was black, where I lived was black, but they had a little concave of apartment that no black people could live in, but our black mothers could clean. Very close to where we live. And the songs that we learned, we learned them in school and in church, was like a language. And often, we learned the song and nobody told us the story. We're going to start with a song that I did not understand until I was in jail. And I don't know when I wasn't singing this song. Ruth is going to lead it. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. Oh, this little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. I'm gonna let it shine, oh, everywhere I go, Lord. I'm gonna let it shine, everywhere I go, Lord. I'm gonna let it shine, let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. Okay, Ruth. All right. What's the light? No. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. Think life. I am alive. I am not going to be obscure. There are some jobs. They say you do your job very well if they can't tell you did it. Excellent secretary. Couldn't even open the office if she was not here. She does her work, and the boss operates as if he is running the situation. This song says, I am not covering up my light. I am not going to move in society where I am obscure and operate in the shadows. If I am not dead, you are going to see me holding space. Give us another verse.
I've got the light of freedom.
I won't let it shine. Oh, I've got the light of freedom. I'm gonna let it shine. I've got the light of freedom. I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine.
Jesus gave me the light.
I'm gonna let it shine. Oh, Jesus gave me the light. I'm gonna let it shine. Jesus gave me the light. I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine.
This is the light of mine.
I'm gonna let it shine. Oh, this little light of mine.
And if it is 1961 and you are in a march and you're in the front of the march with your best friend Annette, and it's the first march in Albany, Georgia, you are not hiding. You might be scared, but you are not hiding. And it was when they locked me up that I really understood this song that I'd sung all of my life. And you, the first time you hear it, it's like a little play song. You learn it in kindergarten. And it's not until you begin to hold your own ground and you begin to draw people responding to you because of the stances you're taking that you can understand that you are saying, I understand that I have a life. And I am going to use my life so it represents the world I want to bring into being. I'm not hiding. That's what this song means. And so it was wonderful to be born at a time when, as a young person, I watched other people stepping out. And I worried that the movement wouldn't come to Albany, Georgia. I just thought if it didn't come to Albany, I would just die. I would have to move to another city. I didn't have to. It came to Albany. I'm not even sure if that's the answer to your question, but that's what I have to say right now.
Bernice, I'm going to add. I see Yolanda Adams in the wing, so I'm going to bring her up on stage as well.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. Yolanda Adams, of course, represents, yes.
Hi.
yet another generation of gospel singers.
Yes.
And of course, a lot of this music that we're celebrating here, as I said, comes out of the church. So did you understand, or did you hear early on in your singing life the music of the civil rights era and how that played with gospel music?
I definitely heard a lot of music in my home, not just gospel music. I heard the blues, I heard bluegrass. I thank God for the kind of parents that I had, because they made sure that I was aware of everything that was going on in the world. I happened to be born in 1961, so I got a chance to know about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and the civil rights movement through my mom and dad, who were very active in their youth organizations, in their churches, as well as the Black Student Union at Texas Southern University when they were going there. And they would put out flyers and tell people, you know, when they were gonna sit in and when they were going to protest quietly, you know, and not build a ruckus. And so I got a chance to hear firsthand. I remember one time, I had to be like 5 years old. My grandmother and two of my siblings and I were on the bus. And I remember having to sit halfway toward the back of the bus. And I had no idea that there was a difference until I started reading when I was in middle school, that for so long we couldn't sit at the front of the bus. As a kid, you just think, okay, it's cool to be back here, I'm on the bus, thanks. But then you find out as you read more and as your parents and grandparents tell you more, there was a difference. And so I'm glad that as we fast forward to 2010, that there are some strides that the Freedom Singers have made that allow me to sit at the front of the bus or on a bus. Because of them, I'm able to sit in first class as opposed to coach. You know, of course, if there's no room, I can't sit in first class. But I'm really trying to make a joke. Y'all can laugh if you want to. It really is not that hard. But no, seriously, and the songs, you know, like Hush, Somebody's Calling My Name. My grandmother and grandfather told me that in the days of slavery and plantations, that's how they used to move and get people from point A to point B, Swing Low, Sweet Chariot. That was also a way of moving the slaves from one place to another so they could go to freedom. I mean, it's amazing how that happens. And I know you guys are looking at me like, Swing Low, Sweet Chariot, and Hush, Somebody's Calling My Name. Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home. Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home. I looked over Jordan, and what did I see? Coming for to carry me home. A band of angels coming after me, coming for to carry me home. And when they got separated, this is what they sang. If you get there before I do, coming for to carry me home. Tell all my friends I'm coming there too, coming for to carry me home.
Yeah.
God bless you.
Chuck. Chuck was arrested. Where, Chuck, and you put a new song into the Freedom Song repertoire?
Yes. I was involved in the movement in 1961, and we heard all kind of music too, and I love the blues. And one of my favorite musicians were Ray Charles.
Yes.
You know, ride a long ways listening to Ray Charles. And they locked me up in Missouri. They gave me a choice. They let me out if I would leave town. Take it out of here, because we were organizers. We were not only freedom singers, mm-hmm. but we were organizing boycotts. We organized sit-ins. We organized on plantations. We organized in the churches. Everywhere we can get people together, we were organizers. But while I was in jail, I was thinking about how long I was going to be there and the things that I had to do to get out of that jail. And so I wrote a song, and it's called Fighting for My Rights. You know I'm tired of segregation. Oh, well, I want my equal rights. Well, respect and an education. Oh, well, not total desegregation. That's why I'm fighting for my rights. I'm fighting for my rights. That's why I'm fighting for my rights. That's why I'm fighting for my rights. You know my cell, it had no window, so the air, it couldn't come through. You know I felt so hot and stuffy that I didn't know what to do. Still I was fighting for my rights. Oh, I was fighting for my rights. Yes, I was fighting for my rights. Yes, I was fighting for my rights. You know my dad, he done told me, oh well, now on his dying bed. Now if my son don't get his freedom, I had rather see him dead. That's why I'm fighting for my rights. Oh, I'm fighting for my rights. That's why I'm fighting for my rights. That's why I'm fighting for my rights.
Where'd you get the song? Where'd you get the tune?
That's from Lonely Avenue, Ray Charles.
Do you remember Lonely Avenue? Any
of y'all remember that song? Nobody remembers that. My God. Oh, that's someone back there. Yeah, you would.
Charles, I'm going to bring up Smokey Robinson, and we want to hear a little bit from him as well. Smokey, come on up.
You didn't really expect any of them to remember that song, did you, Charles? Well, I'd like to add to what they've been saying. In as much as you guys live in a great time, yes, you live in a great time of our nation. You will never have to experience being on a bus. We used to take the Motown reviews where we had all the Motown artists. And you're on a bus and you're traveling through the South, and you want to use the bathroom, and you come to a place where you see a gas station or something, and you get off the bus to use the bathroom, and many times you are turned away at gunpoint to try to use the bathroom. Or if there is a bathroom, they'll have one that says men, women, and around the back it says colored. Like if you were colored, so they used to call black people, you were not a man or a woman, so you just had the colored bathroom, and there was a men's room and a woman's room, but you were not either of those. And to do sit-ins at lunch counters where you'd go in and sit there for an hour or maybe more before anybody would even come and say, what do you want? And most of the time, their greeting would be, we wish you'd leave. Before they would say, what do you want? We wish you'd leave. So you say, we're not going to leave. And you sit there. Another hour goes by, and they come by and say, well, what do you want? And you order something. And then another hour goes by, and they bring you something that you didn't want to eat anyway once you got it. You will never experience those things. And you're so fortunate and so blessed that you don't have to go through that. And I want you guys to look around and see who's in this room and see your people here, because I'm a firm believer, and I speak at schools and gang meetings, what have you, all the time. There's only one race, and that is the human race. We have nowhere to go. Many times I wish that, you know, there was 9/11, and 9/11 was a profound day in our history. And there was a profound time after that, because on 9/11, I was scheduled to go and start a concert tour. And I canceled it, of course. And so about a week and a half went by, and I was talking to some really good friends of mine about the rest of the tour. And they said, hey, man, go out and do the tour, because people need to see that. They need to get some entertainment, some fun in because of what's going on. And for the rest of that year, I closed my concert tours with the national anthem and America the Beautiful, because that's where we are. We're in America the Beautiful. And many times I have thought in my mind, it would be so great for Earth to be attacked by Zectra. You know what I mean? Some place way off in space would come and attack us. And we'd war for about 2-3 days and we would win. But it would give us all a chance to see that we are Earthlings. We are all in this together. We don't have anywhere to go. We're in this together. And we are all brothers and sisters. If they skinned everybody alive, and we would still be able to function, nobody would know who was. You guys are young, and you should know that from Jump Street. You should understand that we are all brothers and sisters. It'd be a different thing if you stabbed somebody white and their blood would come out, it'd be green. And you stabbed a black person, their blood would be orange and their heart was in their kneecap. Or you know what I mean?
Yeah. All right.
We are all the same. And we need to know that. We need to understand that we are in this together. We have nowhere to go. Just recently, Michael Jackson, who was my little brother, who was a profound believer in ecology and human rights and animal rights. He was fanatical about it. And I was fortunate enough to perform a song on the Grammys just recently that he wrote called Earth Song. Yes. And if you listen to Earth Song, you get a good picture of what's going on here, because he was talking about us abusing each other and the earth, right, and the animals and all that. So right now, they're exploring space, but they haven't found anything comparable to this, whereas some of us may be able to escape to it and go there. We are all in this together. We need to think about that. We need to think about what we're doing to the earth. We need to think about what we're doing to the animals. We need to think about what we're doing to each other. And especially what we're doing to each other, because we are all the same. We are all the same. And you guys need to get that message, and you need to live that. You need to understand that we are all brothers and sisters. There's really no white and no black and no yellow and no red and no all that. That's just colors. Flowers come in every color you can think of, and they grow together. And they grow in harmony. Trees. So we're the same. We are all the same. And you should carry that message. You need to spread that message on, because hate is hand-me-down. Hate is hand-me-down. When a baby is born, they have no idea who to hate or why. We pass it on from generation to generation. And if you ask somebody where it started, there's no answer, because nobody knows. If you ask somebody that you know right now, even if it's gang members, I tell this to gang members all the time. Why do you dislike him? Because he has on this color and you have on that color? Or he lives over there and you live over here? Where did that start? Well, I don't know where it started, but my big brother hated his big brother. You know, and hate is hand-me-down. The buck stops here. It stops. You guys got to... out of all the emotions that we have as men, I say men just generally, I mean women also, but you're included in that. As far as I'm concerned, the most ridiculous, uncalled for, stupid, ignorant emotion that we have is prejudice. To be prejudiced against one another because of color or because of where you live or because of your religious belief or that, you know, that is so ridiculous. That is so ridiculous. We are all the same. And we need to get that, man. We need to, you know, right with you. You need to pass it on to your little brothers and sisters and all that. If you're getting some prejudice, ideas, or thoughts from someone that you know who is older, dismiss them because it's ignorance. It is absolute ignorance. And it's been passed on and on and on and on and on and on and on. And all, like I said, it is hand-me-down. Judge for yourself. Judge life and people and things for yourself. And be your own person. Be your own. Decide for yourself if you think that because somebody's another color or they live on another spot or something, you know, that, you know, they're different, because they're not. As an entertainer, I know that entertainment is another kind of world. It's a world of pedestals and accolades and people, you know, putting you in a place where they think that, you know, you're special. You're blessed.
Right.
I am blessed. I live a life that I absolutely love. Mm-hmm. I cannot think of anything I would have rather done with my life than what I'm doing, being in the entertainment world. But however, I do recognize the fact that I don't ever get bigger than human. Never, ever. When I was a kid, when I was going to school, and I'm sure most of the boys in here, you do it anyway. Some of the girls, you do it, but not as much as the boys. We call bag on each other and talk about your mama, you know, and talk about each other's mama, their daddy, and all that, you know. And it goes on. I mean, it's just what you do. And one of the things that they used to say when I was a kid, and everybody would laugh, you know, oh, man, your daddy is the garbage man. And everybody would laugh, oh, boy, you know. I want you to think about this. I sing for a living, okay? From this moment on, right now, if there are no other singers to ever come along in life, ever again, we can make it. But what if there's nobody ever in life again who wants to pick up the garbage? How long would we last? How long would we survive? So nobody's bigger than anybody else. Your job or your position in life does not make you bigger or better than your neighbor. We all make this happen. My God, I wouldn't even have a career if the garbage man didn't have 10 of my albums.
That's right.
Or the cab driver. Mm-hmm. Or the grocer. So think about that. I want you all to think about, I want you to love one another. And I mean that. I mean love one another. Count on each other. Be there for each other. Because that's what it's going to take. I have a song that I wrote a few years back. And I'm going to sing a couple of verses for you. But it says exactly what I want to say to you. Somebody paved the way so we could walk in comfort. Somebody blazed the trail to make a path for us. Somebody walked through the eye of the storm and withstood the driving rain. Don't let it be in vain. Somebody sacrificed, suffered humiliation, so we could all stand tall and hold our heads up high. Somebody fought unthinkable lies, withstood unbearable pain. Don't let it be in vain. And I say that to all of you. Mm-hmm.
We have one more guest, or set of guests, actually, that would like to come up and sing you a final closing song. Would you please welcome the Blind Boys of Alabama? We'll give them the mics. We'll give them the mics. They'll stand right behind you guys. Yeah, they'll stand right behind you. Yeah. I think they can stand. All right, we can do that. Okay.
Do you want to stand or sit?
I want to stand or sit.
All right.
Thank you very much. I didn't know when I got here that I was going to have to sing a song. But since I was told that the first lady wanted it, it has to be done. The Blind Boys of Alabama. This is a song. You don't have a guitar? This song is going to be very appropriate at this time, I think, and I hope that you all will enjoy.
I take one look inside,
This is what I see.
This is what I see.
You know, faith can move mountains, but only love can set us free.
Set us free. Peace, perfect peace.
I cry for
peace in this neighborhood. Love, perfect love.
I cry for
love in this neighborhood.
No water can cool the fire.
Well, not only the Lord can save us.
I cry for peace in this neighborhood.
Had to work that out.
Thank you. Wonderful. I just want to thank all of you for being here. I want all of you to tell some of your friends what happened here today and spread the message that you've heard here today. We have come a long, long, long way in this country in the last few years. What's happening here at the White House shows you that. We have come a long way. So you guys spread the message of love. Love each other. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Smokey. Thank you, Blind Boys of Alabama. It's wonderful. I really appreciate it. This concludes our show. We are a little bit over, so we are going to hold the questions here, unfortunately, because this room needs to be changed over for tonight's performance, of course. But on behalf of the White House, the First Lady, the artist, Smokey Robinson, the Grammy Museum, thank you so much for coming, for participating in this. You got some good words of advice, you heard some great music, and you've learned a little bit, hopefully, about our country. So thank you again. We'll see you next time.